Thanks, John. What do you do when there's something that you really want? When you really want something, how do you deal with it? How do you work with that? Well, I think, certainly I know for me, when there's something that I really want, I tend to try and find a way of working for it. There was a little while ago, some time ago, I thought it'd be a nice thing, a good thing, if I could try and run a half marathon or something like that. So, and of course, you know, today is the day, this is the time of year when those kind of aspirations get, you know, created in you know, once again, maybe. Maybe it doesn't last very long, hopefully. Not long enough to actually do anything about it would be good. But I would like to run a half marathon, so I thought, well, you know, you've got to work towards that, haven't you? So I started to get involved in doing a bit of training, in doing a bit of preparation, in trying to get into being able to run for more than a minute. That was my first challenge. So I've got some training plans and I started to work towards that. I invested in it. I bought the right kind of shoes and that kind of thing. And, you know, one of those bottles that are easy to hold when you're running and this kind of stuff, and worked towards it. And then it got too difficult. I hurt myself and I gave up. When there's something that you really want, what do you do? How do you work towards it? Maybe sometimes it's about patience and working towards something in time, or working towards it in saving up money if it's something that you're trying to buy or to work towards. So often, when we really want something, we work towards it. And sometimes, maybe when we find it too difficult, we just give up. Or maybe if it seems a bit too difficult, we try and go about it in ways that maybe aren't so good. We try and cheat, find a shortcut. Take what we shouldn't have. We try and get hold of it in different ways. We're going through this series thinking about growth and our growth as Christians. You can really grow is the overall thing. And over the last couple of weeks, we've been thinking about needing to grow and wanting to grow, recognizing that we need to grow, recognizing why should we be growing, that the desire in us to want to grow. And it could be quite easy, I think, in the midst of all of that, for it to become something that's very much a work, something that we go off and we do. Certainly, perhaps for lots of us here, when we come to talk about Christian growth, maybe lots of us, well, we know the kind of things that would lead to growing as a Christian. We know some of the, certainly the obvious answers. Maybe some of the things later down the series, there's some titles like How Sin Grows You, and maybe that might be a bit more interesting. But coming up are things, surprisingly enough, like reading the Bible and praying. Next week is about prayer, in fact. So we know some of the things, and so it would be easy perhaps to take the message of the last few weeks and to go, well, I know what those kind of things are. I know I should read my Bible more. I know I should pray more. I know those things will help me to grow as a Christian, and to go out and to go and just turn those things into works that we do. And maybe perhaps we're already struggling or already disappointed with this series because, well, I know the things. I know what they're going to talk about. They're going to talk about reading the Bible and about praying, and I've tried that. And it didn't work. Because actually maybe we've been disappointed. Because actually maybe we've tried this whole growth thing before and we've not seen the results that we hoped for, that we wanted to see. And perhaps sometimes in the midst of that, however long we've been going about, we need to admit, or however new we are to the Christian faith, we need to admit that actually sometimes we don't really know how to grow. And what tonight is about is not the things to do, but it's about the kind of underlying principles. As we kind of go through the rest of the series and thinking about the things that we might do to help towards growth, what's the way in which we do it? And actually, as I read this is all based upon a book. You can really grow. You can get hold of it. You can read it. It's quite an easy read. There's lots of good stuff in there. And actually, as I read that, I thought, actually, this is really helpful. And this is really important foundations as we think about growth, that actually, because it can be so easy to turn these things into works and things that we do. And these foundations are really important as we carry on. So it's based this evening looking around 2 Corinthians chapter 3, particularly verses 12 to 18, but verse 18 in particular you'll find we're going to come back to again and again. But that is itself heavily looking back upon an incident in Exodus chapter 35, verse 29 to 35. Of Exodus, which talk about Moses having gone and met with God, gone before God, and when he came back to the Israelites, his face was radiant. My only way of comprehending this, and it's easy for us to do it right now, is thinking about that moment when you've come back from a very bright sunny day, and you move into a cooler place, and you suddenly realize that this would have been a day to have worn sun cream. because your face is radiant. And the people around you begin to see that your face is radiant. And you have that kind of burning heat. Something like that, but perhaps much more significant, was going on with Moses. He's gone and met with God. He's been in the presence of the glory of God. And remarkably, amazingly, he's come back. He's been with the Israelites. And his face is glowing, radiant with the glory of God. So much so that actually the Israelites are scared to look at him, are scared to see his face. They can see that he's met with God. They were scared enough to go anywhere near the mountain when God was meeting with Moses. And he's come back. His face is glowing. They don't want to get near him. And so he comes, he tells them what God said, and he puts a veil over his face that they won't see the glory of God that's being, even the reflection of the glory of God that's in his face. And Paul, writing in 2 Corinthians, uses that as a picture to describe what's going on. At verse 15 of chapter 3, even to this day, when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. He's using that as a picture to say, even today, they don't see who Jesus is. They don't really see the glory of God. There's still a veil covering it over. But verse 16, but whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. That it's in Jesus, Paul is saying, that veil can be removed. That can be removed, that they might come and know and experience the glory of God. Why is that possible? Because Jesus died. Because on the cross, Jesus bore our sin that separated us from God, that divided us from God, that we could be forgiven and come to him. That Jesus' death, the temple curtain was ripped in two. The temple curtain that separated the people, the sinful people, from the Holy of Holies, where God dwelled, that curtain was ripped in two so that it no longer be divided, but they could come and they could meet a holy God. We don't have to have the same fear of the glory of God as the Israelites did. We should have a reverent fear of God, but we are free to boldly approach him. It talks about in that verse, in verse 15, I think, about boldly coming before God. We can boldly come to him, not because of any goodness in ourselves, but because of what Jesus has done on the cross. That veil can be taken away. That temple curtain was ripped in two, and we can come to him. And that is all the background that leads us to be able to get to what Paul says in verse 18. And so we all with unveiled faces, nothing in the way, can contemplate the Lord's glory and are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. That we can boldly approach him and contemplate his glory. And that through that we are transformed. That this growth comes, this transformation in us comes, as we come and contemplate the Lord's glory. The word contemplate there, for those who've read different versions, you might be familiar with some other words that are sometimes put in there. Sometimes the word behold the Lord's glory is used. You might see you've got a footnote, I think, in your Bible as well that will say it could also be reflect the Lord's glory. And actually, they're all quite helpful words in that translation, actually, that as we come and we gaze at who Jesus is and what he's done for us. Actually, as we reflect him, we let him shine upon us, that something of what we're seeing with Moses might happen in us, that we might reflect who he is and what he's done in our lives. That as we contemplate him, as we consider who Jesus is and what he's done, as we dwell upon him, as we read of him through the Bible, we come and we consider and know more of him. Actually, this growth comes from looking at Jesus. That to know him more, to grow, we need to look at him. And we know that we learn well so often as we observe others, as we walk alongside others. In fact, it's something we're trying to do right now as a church. We're trying to appoint a caretaker at the moment so that we can have someone in place before Graham, our current caretaker, retires. That the aim is to have a little overlap period, because we think that someone new can learn by observing and getting to see Graham. Stop shaking your head, Jono. There's some things he can pass on. You can at least show them where things are. That actually, we think that someone can learn and can observe from actually someone who's been doing it and the experience they've got. And that actually, you can do that a lot better than rather than just writing down a list of stuff and here's what I know, that actually working alongside someone, you can learn things that you couldn't otherwise. You've probably known it in your own life in some way or another through work or study or whatever it might be, where you've learned through observing others and the things that they've done. I've known it in my own life, in working in the life of the church. that I learned a lot when I was working alongside Jem and observing and seeing the things that he did. And the church I was before that, when I was working alongside a guy called Alan, and before that, when I was working with two ministers, Clive and Justin. The things that I can still recall some of the things, even back from what was quite a few years ago now, that I can remember from learning from the way that people did things and how they did it, that we learn as we look to others and we observe them. And it's just the same with Jesus, that we learn and we grow as we observe and we look at him. We grow through that relationship of walking alongside. And that relationship that we have with Jesus is a relationship of love. 1 John chapter 4, this is love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. We loved because he first loved us. We become a Christian as we first recognize God's love for us and make a response in love to him. And we continue to grow as a Christian as we continue to recognize more of his love for us and grow in our love for him. When we talk about growing as a Christian, it can be quite easy to detach that or to look at that as many different things. But actually, when we think about Christian growth, what we really need to be asking ourselves is, are we growing in love for Jesus? Actually, whatever else we come along and we look at in this series and all the things that we might talk about doing and the different ways that we might do them and all the rest of it, actually the fundamental principle underneath it to ask ourselves is, in these things, am I growing in love for Jesus? Am I going to understand more of his love for me? Am I growing to love him more? Because at its heart, Christian growth isn't about understanding more facts or learning some new behaviours or dealing with some other behaviours in our life. Actually, it's about growing in that relationship of love. And some of that might be that we learn some more things to help us understand more of what God's done for us. Some of it might mean that we learn to live more in the way that he wants for us in response to his love. But if we do those things out of anything else other than a relationship of love with Jesus, then it's not really Christian growth. Christian growth, right at the foundation, is that growth in relationship of love, growing in love for Jesus. And how do we go about that? How do we see those things happen? Well, it's exactly what it's talking about in verse 18, that we're to contemplate, that we're to reflect, that we're to look at Jesus' love for us, the God who loved us first and sent his son for us, that he would consider us worth that much, the depth of his love for us, that we can never know how much it cost for him to send his son for us. That we might once again be astounded by all that he's done. That actually we might even allow joy to overflow from just the great breadth of his love for us. Just the joy as we recognize that he has loved us since before we were born. That despite all the times that I've got it wrong and I've messed up and all the times that he's had to draw me back, he still continues to love me in just the same way. That even though he knows all of your failures and all of your shortcomings, he continues to love you in just the same way. Even though he knows all the times that you're going to continue to get it wrong, he still loves us all in just the same way. And there's something in there, I don't know, I find it easy sometimes to laugh at myself. There's some joy in that, that I can just laugh at me and my shortcoming in face of the great, enormous love of God. To be this loved by him. True and healthy Christian growth is growth in love. Whatever else we talk about and we do, it should be growth in love for Jesus. We come back to verse 18. And we all who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory are being transformed into his image. We are being transformed into his image. The other thing we need to understand about Christian growth right at the foundation is that it is happening. That God is the one who is doing it. With ever increasing glory which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. that this is something that God is doing by his Holy Spirit in you. God did not send his son, Jesus, to rescue you, to pay the penalty for your sin, that Jesus would die on the cross and to redeem you and save you. God did not go and do all of that and then say, the rest of it now, the work of sanctification, the rest of that is up to you. I've done my bit. It's over to you guys now. That isn't what God has done. God has redeemed us on the cross and he's given us his Spirit to continue the work of sanctification in our lives, that we might continue through his help, through the work of the Spirit in our lives, to become more like Jesus. This isn't work that we do. This is God's work in us. It's why Paul can write in Philippians chapter 1, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. He can be confident that God will carry it on through to completion. And sometimes it's slow. And it talks about ever-increasing glory in verse 18. Sometimes some might know a translation of that as, it's gone completely out of my house. Ever-increasing glory. There's another way it's sometimes written. I didn't write it down because I knew it. Glory upon one, yeah, glory upon glory, one degree of glory to another. That's something like that. It's gone right out of my head this evening. Anyway, something like that. It's a stage by stage thing. That's the important thing. Is this getting to stage by stage, ever increasing bit by bit? And sometimes that's a slow thing. Just like when we see children growing, we don't see them growing. You know, unless you've really gone away and not seen a child for maybe a year or so or 6 months when they were quite small, then you see that growth, don't you? But when you're there and you're living it, when you're seeing them every week, you don't see them growing. You don't see it happening. And perhaps sometimes we understand and see more of the growth in our lives if we were better at talking to each other about where we are, about how we're growing, about what we've come to learn of God and how we've learned more of his love for us and we've learned to love him more. But those aren't typically things we talk about very freely. And if we see someone and we haven't seen them for a couple of years, it's perhaps not a topic of conversation we even get onto. Maybe if we did, we might be able to reflect a bit more together upon how we have grown and how over a period of time we have increased and grown to be more like Jesus. Even milestones in children growing, I've discovered, aren't really milestones, I don't think. These kind of development milestones. Before I had children, I thought, you know, one day children don't talk and the next day they say their first word. You know, one day nothing, next day drink. But this doesn't seem to be the case, I have learned. I've learned that they make noises. That Luke particularly, everything was gah, gah, gah. And then we wondered, is he saying car? Or he said it that time and he pointed at a car. Car! I wonder if car is his first word. Duh! Duh! Why is he pointing at a pigeon and going, duh? Is he trying to say duck and point at a pigeon? I don't know. That could be duck, or he might just be, you know, moving on from just gar. Even rolling over, you know, you kind of, it's halfway. Does that count? Kind of on the side. Does that count as rolling over, or is that, okay, oh, they did it, but it looked like that might have been by accident. Does that count? They haven't done it for 3 weeks now. Now, does that count as them rolling over? Because you get books where you're meant to write these things in. It's a mum thing, I think. I've kept away from it. But did it count on that day when they just did it, and it seemed like they did it by accident, and they haven't done it for 3 or 4 weeks since? Or does it count when they do it the next time, when they start doing it all the time? I'm sorry, going off on one. But the point is, even some of these things where we see children growing, we think there's these kind of development milestones. They're not clear-cut, are they? And it's so much like that in our growth. It's not always clear-cut. And we go off to festivals or we have kind of mountaintop experiences and we think, oh, that's it, I've reached this kind of point. And then maybe we come away and we realise that we feel like everything's gone back to normal, maybe. It's bit by bit, stage by stage, ever-increasing glory. And God is the one who will do it, who is doing it. So that's good. So that's the end of this evening. God does it, all sorted. And the end of the series, in fact. So I don't know what we're going to do for the next few weeks. You can really grow because God does it. And good, we're done. Philippians goes on after Paul having said, I'm confident that you will continue to grow. He says this in chapter 2, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you. That we will recognise that actually when it comes to thinking about growth, that we do have our part to play. Paul says we're to continue to work it out. We continue to go through this process of beholding and reflecting and contemplating Jesus and applying the salvation that he has worked into our lives. To continue to work out what it means to walk the life of the salvation he's given us day by day. To continue to work it out in practice. And actually there's a section in the book that just has kind of an analogy for this. That was, I thought, really helpful, so much so I couldn't just put it in my own words or just pilfer it. So I thought it'd be much better if I just read it to you. So this is from, if you've got the book, this is page 35. The challenge of Philippians 2 is to work hard at growth, but the assurance of Philippians 1 is that God will work that growth. We will grow up. Our work depends on his, but our work is not made irrelevant by his. The key is to remember what Christian growth is. It is growing up within a relationship of love. It is all about a father-child relationship. Sometimes Daisy, my daughter, asks me to help her get a toy from the top of her toy cupboard. So imagine it's the day after her birthday. And for her birthday, I gave her a new jigsaw puzzle. Now, I ask her if she would like to do the puzzle with me and receive a yes, please in reply. So I pick Daisy up. And as I do so, she strains towards the top to reach the puzzle. She puts every effort her little body can manage into grabbing it because she really wants that puzzle, and she will reach that puzzle. But she will reach it because I lift her. I could have just got the puzzle down for her. I could have lifted her high enough that she didn't need to lift her arms at all. I could have done all the work for her. But instead, I involved her, and this increased her enjoyment. Did Daisy reach the puzzle? Yes. Did I reach the puzzle? Yes. I lifted. She reached. She needed me to lift her. I didn't need her to reach. But we did it together. This is how God grows us. He works in our hearts to show us Christ and excite us about being like Christ. And then he shows us an area of life where we can be more like him. And then he lifts us towards Christ-likeness as we reach for it. We grab it, but only because he made us able to grab it. He involves us in our growth. Did we do the work? Yes. Did God do the reach? Yes. We needed him to be at work to enable us to grow. He didn't need us to work to achieve that growth, but he allowed us to do it together with him. But what if Daisy hadn't reached for that puzzle? What if she had decided halfway up that she didn't really want the puzzle enough to bother straining her little arms towards it? Well, we don't know. But what we do know is that it would have been up to me, not her. I could have chosen to lift her all the way, so she would still have the puzzle despite her lack of effort. I could have chosen to put her down until she realised she did want the puzzle and did want to reach for it. I could have ensured she had the toy, or ensured she did not. The point is that God is the one who will bring us to completion, but we have our part to play. We can join in, we can help, we can reach as God lifts us up. And I find that a really helpful image. We grow in love. We grow in love as God grows us. And again, whatever comes, whatever else we look at through the rest of this series, we need to keep that foundation that it's not us who work the growth, but we join in with what God is doing as he grows us. And finally, again, to come back to 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image. This is written to a whole group of people. All of us are growing together. That growth is something that we do together. That we grow together as his church. We can be very individualistic in how we think about our faith, in how we think about church very often. But we're a body, we're a family. And growth is something that we do together. And actually, if you think about family for a moment, it's easy to recognise that sometimes families can kind of be held up by the lack of one person's growth. That actually sometimes you can get families where maybe a child's got some kind of development delay, and actually the family's kind of stuck in a certain point of family life because that child is still sort of stuck around a certain age almost. Or sometimes maybe parents can't quite grasp that a child is growing up and has grown past a certain stage and they're still kind of clinging on to something in a certain way. Whether it be, you know, we're still feeding with a spoon because they can't do it themselves yet and they haven't realised that actually the child has grown to a point where they can feed themselves. And they'll only be able to do it actually when the parents have grown enough to realise that their child can do it. Or perhaps it's a child who's still living at home and hasn't moved out and they can't move on to that next step of independence and the parents can't move on to that next step of having kicked their children out of the house until they've got to that point. Sometimes we can hold one another up in our growth, or sometimes we can help enable one another in our growth. When we think about growth, perhaps we often think about Galatians chapter 5 and the fruit of the Spirit. And I need to grow in the fruit of the Spirit in love and joy and peace and patience and all the rest. And so often when we come and we think about those verses and those things, we think about the fruit of the Spirit for about me personally and how I'm going to grow in those things. And yet the verses around it say things like this. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you'll not gratify the desires of the flesh. Or this, a few verses later. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. Or just after the fruit of the Spirit says, let us not become conceited, provoking and envying each other. All those things that are said are plural. All those yous are plural. They're written to a whole group of people. They're written to the church, to a body, to a family. When Paul was writing about growing in the fruit of the Spirit, he was writing to a whole group of people and saying, let us all grow in the fruit of the Spirit. Let us all grow in love, in peace, in patience. I'll tell you what, it's easy for me to be patient on my own when no one else is around. That's the times when I find it the easiest to be patient. When the rest of you are here, much harder. The fruit of the Spirit, our Christian growth, is something that we're meant to do together. That actually we should be looking for and praying for and encouraging and supporting the growth of one another in whatever comes through the rest of this series. Whatever we're thinking about, we shouldn't just think about it in the context of, oh, well, I'll go and do that so that I will grow. But about how we can help one another grow. This should be a place of mutual support. And sometimes we can hold one another up. Where either we become, and our view of ourselves becomes the one who are always supported by others. Or our view of ourselves, and we become, and this is perhaps the worst one, when we become the one that we view ourselves as the one who always supports other people. Becomes most obvious to me when the people I go to and I say, oh, I can see you're really struggling. Can I put that on the prayer sheet? And I say, oh, no. I wouldn't want to put something on the prayer sheet about me. Because I'm the one that supports other people, not the one that gets supported and prayed for. And actually we grow when we learn to mutually support one another. When we learn that actually we all need the support of other people. And that we all need support. We can support one another. Perhaps as we go through the rest of the series, there's a sense of think not about how you can grow, but about how you can grow others. That actually we might grow together. And actually as we seek to grow one another, we'll all grow in the process. There's a danger as we approach this and as we see all the things that come through this series, and we kind of get our head down and we just work at growth. I want to grow, and so I'm just going to get my head down, I'm going to work towards it, I'm going to do all these things because then I'm going to grow. And it just becomes work. And we miss that what we're meant to be doing is growing in love. To grow, to know more of Jesus' love for us and to love him more. That we miss that actually when we're talking about growth, we're talking about something that God is going to do. And we're joining him in with the things that he's already doing in our lives and he wants to do in us. And we miss that when we talk about growth, it's something that we're meant to do together. that we're meant to encourage in others and allow others to encourage in us, that we might ultimately know more of Jesus, that we might know more of him in our lives, that we might walk more like Jesus did and love him more. So that we all, with unveiled faces, contemplate the Lord's glory and are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory. Thanks, Edith.